Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I decided a little bit earlier today not to sit at home and luxuriate in my own filth, but to come in and do a radio program for y'all. I'm not looking for gratitude. I'm just saying. Have you ever wondered? I know most of you hear this program, or many of you do, on stations which also broadcast a thing called All Things Considered. Well, here's a thing to consider. Have you ever wondered what the lyrics to the theme song of that program are? Well, thanks to a listener, I now know, and I'm sharing them with you.
Here we go again.
Honest flies in combi-set, on just now bursing of pieces.
That's it.
From a 1945 movie called Murder, He Says, starring Fred McMurray and Marjorie Main. Isn't that a nutty coincidence? I'm sure it's just a total coincidence, because why would you steal that? Oh, ladies and gentlemen, we're not number one. A report released this week by a respected think tank, at least respected by the Washington Post, which wrote this story, ranks the United States dead last in the quality of its healthcare system. That's really not number one. That's so not number one when compared with 10 other Western industrialized nations. The same spot the United States has occupied in four previous studies by the same organization. We are really so not. Not only did the United States fail to move up between 2004 and 2014, as other nations did with concerted effort and significant reforms, it also has maintained this dubious distinction while spending far more per capita on health care than Norway, $8,500 versus $5,600. Norway has the second most expensive system. Although the United States spends more on health care than any other country and has the highest proportion of specialists, survey findings indicate that from the patient's perspective and based on outcome indicators, the performance of American healthcare is severely lacking. This was from the Commonwealth Fund, a New York-based foundation. Oh, New York. That promotes improved healthcare. The data for the 2014 report was collected before the Affordable Care Act went into full effect, so that reform may eventually boost the U.S. out of last place. But according to the study, the problems of our healthcare system remain so pervasive that it will take more than better access to insurance and equity to resolve them. Karen Davis, a professor in the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins, lead author of the study, said overall improvement, quote, is a matter of accountability. She's talking about the United States. Having information on your performance relative to your peers and being held accountable to achieving the kind of care that patients should expect to get, unquote. The United Kingdom, where I'm sitting right now, sitting right on it, which spends just $3,400 per person on healthcare, placed first overall in the comparison of 11 nations, which included Australia, New Zealand, Switzerland, Canada, France, Germany, and others. You've been to others, haven't you? Easy to get a passport. In 2004, the UK ranked third. They're not your grandmother's National Health Service anymore, said Davis, the author, co-author of the study, lead author of the study. The UK diagnosed its healthcare system's problems and addressed them. They really have moved up over time, Davis said. A lot of it has been systematic attention to increasing resources in the system. She means more money. Officials hired more specialists, gave bonuses to family physicians who meet quality targets, and everyone has a doctor. The United States, on the other hand, quote, ranks behind most countries on many measures of health outcomes, quality, and efficiency. U.S. physicians face particular difficulties receiving timely information, coordinating care, and dealing with administrative hassles, according to the report. U.S. fares well in providing preventive care and patient-centered care, but among its many deficiencies, according to Davis and the report, are a relative shortage of primary care physicians, lack of access to primary care. Well, that's convenient because there wouldn't be any physicians to, if you could, especially for the poor. A large number of low-income residents who skip needed care, do not get recommended tests, or do not fill prescriptions because of cost, high infant mortality, inordinate levels of mortality from conditions that could have been controlled, such as high blood pressure, and lower healthy life expectancy as of age 60. In short, ladies and gentlemen, we're not number one. Hello, welcome to the show.
Here we stand in distant land with distant memories, wondering why the things we see have distant reverie. Have we met sometime somewhere in life's gigantic show? Have we both fulfilled a part in plays of long ago? The tickets are sold, the rehearsals are done, the curtain pulls back to view a new act. Now this could be fun, the show has begun. Taking on a brand new part and study in the role, making change of character that new things might unfold. Looking for a new approach to help us to display inner depth and beauty to the part we have to play. The tickets are sold, rehearsals are done, back to view a new act. Now this could be fun, the show has begun.
Just off Leicester Square, and I mean off, in London, England, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you, and I mean welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Well, England's football players have apologized for being eliminated from the World Cup, saying they were gutted not to have performed better. I don't think they mean that literally. It's a metaphor. It's an English metaphor. I'm gutted. Wayne Rooney was among members of the squad to publicly lament their exit from the tournament on Friday night in his statement posted on his Facebook page. Well, maybe if he were spending more time working on football and less time on his Facebook... On his Facebook page, Rooney said he was, quote, devastated to be out of the World Cup. Going into each game, we had great belief in ourselves. But unfortunately, it hasn't worked out. Sorry to all the fans that traveled and at home that haven't done better. ... Gutted! Exclamation point. Everybody in my neighborhood is now trying to decide what country to root for. Well, my wife spent 4 years in Argentina, so... Deadline Detroit Tigers manager Brad Ausmus has apologized this week, a day after he sarcastically told reporters that he beats his wife when his team isn't playing well. Ausmus says he realized his words were insensitive and in poor taste as soon as they left his mouth. Entering his mouth, not so much. The first-year manager was asked after Detroit's 2-1 loss to Kansas City on Wednesday how his mood is when he heads home from the ballpark these days. The Tigers have lost 20 of 29. Ausmus, clearly trying to joke, said, quote, I beat my wife. Oh, sorry. About a minute later, without being prompted, Ozma said, I didn't want to make light of battered women. I didn't mean to make light of that, so I apologize for that if I offended anyone. Brad, next time I ask you, just tell him, gutted. Gutted. Deadline Philadelphia, Peter Nero. Name ring a bell? Former music director of the Philly Pops. The music director emeritus, as a matter of fact. As a matter of fact, emeritus. Has apologized for public statements he made criticizing officials of the Pops Orchestra, who negotiated his contract settlement 2 years ago. Statements that preceded his removal as conductor in an upcoming Independence Day weekend concert. Well, now you've ruined my 4th of July weekend. In the story published about the end of his career with the Pops in a local newspaper, that Nero expressed frustration about the contract talks, comments that prompted the Pops president to file a defamation suit against Nero. The suit notes Nero stated in the newspaper interview that, quote, a bunch of crooks dressed in $3,000 suits came in who didn't know a thing about the music business, unquote. That sounds like all the guys who run the music business. The suit was filed by the president of the Philly Pops. It seeks damages and attorney fees. Nero said in his apology, published in the Philadelphia Inquirer, quote, I recognize I perhaps should have been more careful. I apologize for that conversation and some of the statements I made. I did not mean to cause harm nor offend. The Inquirer said Nero's apology was issued by his attorney, who did not respond to messages left at his office. It's just put a pall on the whole Independence Day thing now. Poland's powerful Catholic Church apologized this week for pedophilia committed by its priests in an unprecedented ceremony attended by top clergy as well as abuse victims. Ashamed and contrite, we ask for forgiveness from God and the priests' victims, Bishop Piotr Libera said during a special liturgy in the southern city of Krakow. Church leaders in the heavily Catholic country had already apologized at press conferences, but never before had the gesture taken such a solemn form, according to Jesuit priest Jacek Prusak. The event was part of a two-day conference on preventing church pedophilia. Well, there isn't any. Why would you have to? No. It was attended by experts from abroad. You know what an expert is. Fast-talking guy from out of town. Experts from abroad and several victims. Priest pedophilia has long been a taboo topic in Poland. Compared to the United States or Ireland, Poland's church is only at the very beginning of the road, said Father Adam Zak, youth coordinator for the Polish Bishops' Conference. Youth coordinator, huh? Oh, okay. No, nothing. Several high-profile cases have rocked the nation in recent months, including that of Archbishop Józef Wesołowski, who is alleged to have had sex with boys while serving as a papal envoy in the Dominican Republic. Poland's church has thus far ruled out compensating victims of the abuse. It does face its first civil lawsuit for damages. No, but there's an apology. You don't need money. Sometimes when a politician opens his mouth, interesting things happen, like the case of former Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer, the highly quotable Democrat who is flirting with a 2016 presidential bid, apologized this week for making, quote, a number of stupid and insensitive remarks. Well, that should pave the way to the presidency. It worked for... I am deeply sorry, he said in a National Journal story. Oh, no, this he said on Facebook. Why don't they just call it apology book and be done with it? I deeply sorry and apologize for my carelessness and disregard. Among Schweitzer's comments, he said House Majority Leader Eric Cantor set off his, quote, gaydar, unquote, and Southern men are, quote, a little effeminate, unquote. Don't say that around the truck stop, boy. There was more. Schweitzer essentially likened Senate Intelligence Chairwoman Dianne Feinstein to a prostitute. Quote, she was the woman who was standing under the streetlight with her dress pulled all the way up over her knees. And now she says, I'm a nun when it comes to this spying. I mean, maybe that's the wrong metaphor, but she was all in. That's all the quote from former Montana governor. How do you get to be Montana governor saying stuff like that? Same way you get to be president. Practice. T-Mobile Chief Executive Officer John Legere apologized on his Twitter account. What, Facebook's not good enough for you, babe? For saying that rivals are, quote, raping consumers by overcharging them. What do we have to... You know the rules. Man down, hand... No, sorry, you know the rules. No Holocaust jokes, no rape jokes. or references, okay? Really? Quote, the drawback to having no filter when I speak, sometimes I need a filter. Genuinely apologize to those offended last night, Legere said. I know I have a R-rated vocabulary, but even I can go too far, unquote. A self-styled rebel who routinely wears a hot pink T-shirt to promote T-Mobile, Legere has helped the fourth largest wireless carrier outpace its bigger competitors in subscriber additions this year. Not by talking like that. At a press event, Legere railed against AT&T and Verizon, the big two in the mobile phone space. Quote, these high and mighty duopolists that are raping you for every penny you have, the effers hate you, unquote. Whereas what? T-Mobile loves you. In that special way. Dateline Tokyo. A Japanese cabinet minister apologized this week after appearing to suggest people in nuclear disaster hit Fukushima could be persuaded to put up with contaminated waste if the government threw enough cash at them. Not literally throw. Figuratively throw. Still, Environment Minister Nobutero Ishihara came under fire after saying money would be a decisive factor for local governments and residents being asked to accept plans to build storage facilities for radioactive waste. The remarks were seen as insensitive to the tens of thousands of people who remain unable to return to homes around the crippled Fuk plant because of persistently high levels of radiation. Here's $5. What do you think? Fuk Governor Yuhei Satu immediately hit back, saying, quote, it was extremely regrettable. The remarks rode roughshod over the feelings of residents who are longing for their hometowns. The former environment minister called for Ishihara's resignation. Ishihara told reporters, I sincerely apologize to those who were annoyed by my remarks. He said, however, that as the minister in charge of reconstruction, he would continue exploring proposals for waste storage facilities, including details of compensation. Here's $10. Go, beat it. Delta Airlines, under a deluge of worldwide ridicule, issued an apology for using an image of a giraffe to represent Ghana, where no giraffes live. Delta tweeted the celebratory message Monday after the U.S. team defeated Ghana 2-1 in the World Cup. The tweet showed a photo of the Statue of Liberty with a 2 next to it and a photo of a giraffe with a 1 next to it. The counter tweets and web-based news stories came fast and furious, acknowledging the reality that many Americans, perhaps most, have no notion of whether giraffes live in Ghana. One tweeter said, I really hope nobody with Delta's social media team gets fired this morning. The internet rage machine needs to grab a drink and chill out. Botswana, babe. They live in Botswana. Delta posted its apology on the news page of its website. Quote, as a global airline, we understand the role images play in shaping global perceptions. We also recognize our responsibility to create messages that are both accurate and inclusive. We take this responsibility seriously. Yesterday, we failed to meet this responsibility. For this, we sincerely apologize. Somebody took a course in apology writing. Somebody's teaching it. Dateline Amsterdam, Greenpeace International has acknowledged losing $5.2 million on a bet that the euro would not strengthen against other currencies in 2013, which the euro did. The environmental group, which is based in Amsterdam. All right, then. I think I'm going to go visit their office. Said the money was lost by an employee who acted beyond the limits of his authority but had hoped to benefit the organization. Greenpeace did not identify the employee who has been fired, noting there was no evidence of fraud. Greenpeace apologized in a statement for the blunder to supporters and donors and said it was studying what went wrong. It said it would absorb the loss over a period of several years by killing dolphins. No! Not by trimming infrastructure investments. The group pledged not to reduce spending on campaigns to protect the environment. It's like the London, it's like the Amsterdam whale. Since it's Greenpeace, not. KFC has apologized to the family of a 3-year-old girl who was reportedly asked to leave a restaurant in Mississippi by an employee who said the girl's facial injuries upset other customers. It wasn't the chicken. The allegation that she was asked to leave was published on Victoria's Victories, a Facebook page that traces Victoria Wiltshire's recovery from a pit bull attack that has left her heavily scarred. It prompted outrage on social media and led KFC to issue an apology on its Facebook page. Well, why don't we all just go to Facebook? No. As soon as we were notified of this report, we immediately began an investigation, as this kind of hurtful and disrespectful action would not be tolerated by KFC, the company said. The company said. Somebody in the company said. The company didn't say anything. Except, how do we lower our taxes this year? Quote, regardless of the outcome of our investigation, we have apologized to Victoria's family and are committed to assisting them. The company is making a $30,000 donation to assist with her medical bills. The whole company is behind her. I wonder if they mean the whole company, Yum Brands, or just the KFC part. Yes. Met with a stony silence, as I thought. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Speaking of things nuclear, as we were moments ago, now news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet.
Addie the Atom is on vacation this week. The operator of Japan's damaged Fuku nuclear plant, Tokyo Electric Power, has issued a clarification regarding an earlier news release concerning efforts to freeze highly radioactive water at Fuku. The original June 16th bulletin detailed, quote, difficulties were encountered with an effort to freeze standing water, unquote, as part of TEPCO's decommissioning project, which is expected to take decades. How long you got? These problems amounted to a failure to freeze approximately 11,000 tons of contaminated standing water in trenches under two reactor buildings. Project TEPCO started late April. The freezing process, essentially the same as that being employed in the much more ambitious ice wall project, involves piping in a solution of calcium chloride cooled to minus 30 degrees Celsius. On June 18th, however, after international media outlets confused this news with the later and ongoing year-long effort to build the ice wall, TEPCO offered a clarification. Quote, this has nothing to do with the ice wall, which is constructed by freezing the soil surrounding pipes. TEPCO blamed running water under the number two reactor building and uneven water levels for preventing the radioactive water from freezing. Maybe they put salt in it? We're behind schedule, but have already taken additional measures, including putting in more pipes, so we can remove contaminated water from the trench starting next month. That's it. More pipes. I was going to suggest that. Both projects are being undertaken by the same contractor. Contaminated standing water results from TEPCO having pumped enormous amounts of cooling water over the reactors to try to cool them. Compounding that problem is the incoming groundwater constantly moving through the site. That's what the ice wall is meant to prevent. At present, there are more than 1,000 storage tanks on the contaminated site holding both treated and untreated water. TEPCO also recently undertook a water bypass program to pump uncontaminated water into the Pacific before it mixed with the standing radioactive water. The company has also dumped treated water into the ocean and has admitted to several tank leaks, pump or equipment breakdowns, and breaches of containment walls in the past 2 years that have resulted in the release of hundreds of tons of radioactive water into our ocean. The Northern Land Council in Australia has withdrawn its nomination of Muckaty Station, north of Tennant Creek as the site for Australia's first nuclear waste dump. Because they don't have one. A small section was put forward by the council to store Australia's low and intermediate level nuclear waste. It's about 600 kilometers north of Alice Springs. You know where that is. The NLC nominated the site, the Northern Land Council, on behalf of members of the Ngapa group 8 years ago, but four other clans have laid claim to the land and say it is adjacent to a sacred site. Everything down there is adjacent to a sacred site. No, isn't it? Really? These traditional owners have been challenging the nomination in federal court, arguing they were not consulted and did not give their consent. Quote, we haven't been consulted properly for our own country. We know our land, the story, the songs, the dreamings. That's why we stand up and spoke for ourselves, said traditional owner Kylie Sambo. The court action, she says, came years after fighting and played a pivotal role in the decision. There is no way in the world I would let a nuclear waste dump come to my grandfather's country because I have fought very hard to get the country back, and we're not just going to give it away just like that. She said the council should have been upfront and honest with the people of the country. I was surprised they did things the wrong way. I knew at the start they did wrong things, but I didn't know it was this bad till I heard it in court of how they went about the nomination. But what I strongly believe is they should have done it better instead of doing it under the table or behind closed doors, as people say. If you do it under the table and behind closed doors, better make sure you stretch first. Radioactive tritium, our old friend, in the groundwater beneath the Indian Point nuclear power plant could be part of an ongoing leak and not a momentary spike, as first thought. According to federal regulators, elevated elements, levels of tritium were found in two monitoring wells in late March near Indian Point Unit 2 in upstate New York. Samples in April and May showed decreasing levels, suggesting the contamination might have been related to the movement of used nuclear fuel during a maintenance thing. But samples collected this month showed the concentration rising again and then decreasing. There's no health threat to either the public or Indian Point workers, the NRC says. But it could be indicative of an ongoing source of leakage rather than just a spiky kind of thing. The EPA characterizes tritium as one of the least dangerous radioactive particles. Not dangerous. One of the least. It's like calling somebody one of the least talented people in show. It's not saying they're not talented. Entergy, the owner, is testing drains, pipes, and tanks for damage and making sure there were no unidentified spills last March. Clean, cheap, safe, too leaky to meter. Our friend, the Atom. From London, this is Le Show. And, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you've been keeping up. What American news media call ISIS, and other news media, notably Al Jazeera, refers to it as ISIL. Either the S is for Syria, L is for Levant. Levant, not Oscar Levant. You know, the whole area, their aspirations are bigger than Syria, apparently. Their eyes are bigger than their stomach, too. That they have now taken control of the at least one crossing, point on the border crossing between Iraq and Jordan, as well as many of the border crossings to Syria, taken control of many towns, maybe that oil refinery. You saw President Obama this week said sending 300... what are they? I think they're special forces guys of some sort. Navy SEALs, perhaps. But no combat troops. Yeah, of course, because Mr. Mission, the old mission creep hasn't set in yet. Just wait. Or not. I don't know. But perhaps to the surprise of some, all of the old guard have come out of the... I believe it would be the woodwork. The two Pauls, Wolfowitz and Bremer, went public with very staunch and furious defenses of the Iraq War policy that they were instrumental with in. Former Vice President Cheney co-wrote an op-ed on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal with his daughter Liz, in which they excoriated the Obama administration's foreign policy, held it responsible for what's going on in Iraq now, and for the weakening of the country. Even going so far as to say that that seemed to be the president's intention. So while the situation gets worse over there, the rhetoric flames up over here. And perhaps to find out how that proceeds from now, we have to go a bit subterranean.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground vice president, the action-packed diary of the man who was just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney.
Confidential.
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 It was like I explained to Lynn after she washed out of me Wyoming bake-off with her pineapple upside-down cake. Sometimes losing is the best kind of winning. Although in that case, losing was the best kind of not having to eat Lynn's pineapple upside-down cake. But my daughter Liz, the straight one, had lost a heartbreaking Republican primary in Wyoming with what you might call her pineapple upside-down campaign. She had attacked gay marriage, which made her less straight sister Mary somewhat upset, which in turn pushed my pacemaker deeper into the red than a liberal's budget, which only made Lynn's cooking worse. Clearly, for the family's sake, someone had to get Liz out of her funk. I'd convinced her to sign on to the letterhead of a new foundation my folks were setting up to alert Americans to the looming jihadist threat from everywhere in the world where Bill O'Reilly wasn't on cable. Now we were starting to get incoming from what Rummy liked to call dead-enders. Leftists who couldn't stand the fact that we'd almost managed to turn Iraq into a little Nebraska, except with a bicameral legislature. Until that is, a certain president whose middle name might as well have been Jihad was let loose in the foreign policy arena and proceeded to break all of China and half the glassware. An op-ed signed by Liz and me might help bring the young lady out of her persistent feminine dolors, and at the same time might help deflect some of the flack from our leftist friends. But even on a prestigious editorial page provided by my pal Rupert in exchange for some powdered moose horn, which his ex-wife once told him was like Viagra on steroids, an op-ed could only deliver so much throw weight. I needed a more potent defender than an overweight ex-senatorial candidate in a state with more elk than voters. I needed somebody who still had gravitas in Washington, meaning somebody who was willing to get up early every Sunday and go on TV. And I needed to do some serious arm twisting, even if he had two bad arms. Wednesday, 2:17 p.m.
Well, Mr. Vice President, I'm pleased to say you're looking fine. Obviously, the Duracell Golds are just what the pacemaker ordered.
Thanks, John. And I have to say that I appreciate your recent work in putting this excuse for a president on the defensive regarding his pusillanimous hesitancy to engage in robust projection of American power.
Well, sir, it's kind of a pleasure to point up the shortcomings of a fella who sent me running back to the Senate with Sarah Palin between my legs.
I can imagine, though I'd rather not. John, you know I've still got pretty good sources over in Iraq.
Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Chalabi's still on retainer, isn't he?
I think he's doing some weekend anchor duty on the Fox News Mideast channel, if that's what you mean. But the situation over there is as bad as it was before David Petraeus figured out that more troops are better than fewer troops. We need some close air support, and fast.
Well, if you want the president to authorize airstrikes, I can certainly...
Not that kind of air support. We need you on television making the case that what's happening now has nothing to do with what happened before, especially before 2009.
Well, Mr. Vice President, there are plenty of good, credible Republicans who are ready to enlist in that cause. I know Lindsey Graham was on Face the Nation last week calling the president's foreign policy dumb.
John, you and I both know Lindsey Graham is such a lightweight, he'd blow away in a zephyr. Where did he ever hang by his arms for 5 years?
Well, I know, but he just did survive a rough primary campaign and...
Oh, tortured by the Tea Party.
Okay, but Wolfowitz and Paul Bremer have been out there making the case, Mr. Vice President. Mm. We've gotten splendid response from everybody in the old gang, except...
Except Condi Rice and Colin Powell, the only two of our people who turned their backs on their country for the sake of some so-called credibility. They've been more silent than a deaf-mute in church after we made ourselves all diverse by putting them on the team. John, it seems to me you're playing harder to get than a sober starlet. We need you on call 24/7 to be our rapid response force, to push back any hint of blame-pointing or finger-gaming.
I think you got that a little backwards, Dick.
Now, Pacey sometimes gets the electronic hiccups. You know damn well what I mean.
Dick, nobody's a bigger supporter of a forward projection of American power than I am. Nobody's been more publicly derisive of the idea of leading from behind than I have. If we'd gone into Syria 3 years ago and given the moderate rebels the weapons and intelligence they were begging for...
Those weapons and that intelligence would have fallen into the hands of their more militant comrades by now. Forget about that. Listen, if I didn't have a heavy heart, literally, I'd be out there doing this myself. But my doctor says the TV interviews in unfriendly environs could be perilous for my future ability to have any future ability. And if pity doesn't work, how about this?
Just a table with some leather straps.
Yep, just that. Did it ever occur to you, John, that I'd enhanced not just our interrogation techniques, but our persuasive techniques as well? You know Lieutenant Strauss here.
Hello, sir.
No, I don't. Is he here to clean up?
No, John. The wet cloth in his hand is not exactly for cleaning up, nor is the water jug.
Dick, I just don't think it helps anyone to dredge up all the WMD and cakewalk stuff now.
I think the lieutenant and I would agree that it might help someone to dredge all that up. Lieutenant, you want to help our somewhat physically compromised friend onto the table there?
Yes, sir.
Dick, this is silly. This is stupid. This is stereotypically beyond the pale, whatever the pale is.
That's the beauty part, John. Nobody would believe it. Okay, Lieutenant, I think our friend here looks a little thirsty.
Okay, Dick, I'll do it. Stop the enhanced whatever.
You'll do Meet the Press?
Yes, they love me there.
You'll do Face the Nation?
I have my own cup in the pantry, yes.
You'll do This Week and Fox News Sunday and State of the Union and whatever cable crap comes up?
Yes, yes, yes.
Lieutenant, I think our friend here isn't that thirsty after all.
Yes, sir.
You surprise me, John.
Really?
Yeah. I thought you could take it for at least a little bit longer.
Well, I would have, but...
Yeah?
I'm in something of a rush.
Oh, really?
Yes. I'm doing the Daily Show tonight.
You know, I might have to call one of my friends at the DEA to warn them that the only thing more addictive than OxyContin is pancake makeup. And a partial diary for the middle of June, 2014. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 And now, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole, Jr. Well, you know, after Rio comes Tokyo. In an effort to avoid negative publicity, the Tokyo Metropolitan Government is revising the construction plans of three facilities for the 2020 Olympics to reduce costs, while taking into account the environment and the facilities' use after the Games. Quote, "What kind of legacy will we leave? We need to consider that from a realistic and reasonable perspective," says Tokyo's governor when he announced a review of the initial plan Tokyo submitted for its bid. 9 months have passed since Tokyo won the bid. Though the application file is seen as an international pledge, a senior official of the Tokyo Metropolitan Government said the revision was, quote, inevitable. At the time of the bid, the 10 facilities Tokyo planned to build were estimated to cost a combined 153 billion yen. After recalculation late last year, the figure jumped to about 380 billion due to soaring material and payroll costs, apparently as a result of the rising reconstruction demand following the earthquake and the thing. The recalculation was kept secret, an official confessed. Quote, "We thought the impact would be too great if we revealed it then," unquote. Tokyo, however, decided to announce the review of the initial plan out of concern that it could be severely criticized for wasting money if construction was carried out as planned. The deadline to submit an official plan to the IOC is February next year. As bidding for the basic design of each facility is scheduled to start this July, the decision is considered last minute. A venue for canoe, kayak, sprint, and rowing showed the greatest gap between the initial cost estimate and the recalculation. The 2.5-kilometer course is planned on a waterway to be situated on a landfill of non-burnable trash, but it was later learned in discussions with sports associations and neighboring local governments that a dam needed to be built to maintain a still water area, and the landing facility for non-burnable trash would have to be moved, raising the cost from the initial $6.9 billion to an estimated $100 billion. A source close to the bidding said the plan in the application file was, quote, made for the time being, when placing the winning bid was the top priority. A detailed estimate of the construction cost was reportedly at the bottom of the priority list. Also in Japan, Fuk authorities said this week they wanted the Olympic torch relay to pass close to the crippled nuclear plant when Japan hosts the Games, despite uncertainties over radioactive contamination there. Yohei Satou, the region's governor, proposed that runners use a national highway that passes the Fuk nuclear plant, where reactors were sent into meltdown. At its closest point, the road is about a mile and a quarter from the plant, although Sato did not specify if runners should use that part of the highway. "We wish to have a torch relay here so that the status of our reconstruction can be conveyed accurately," he told a news conference. After meeting Yoshiro Mori, president of the organizing committee and a former prime minister, he said his committee needs more details about the request for a torch relay and wants to be able to study them closely. He also said untrue rumors about safety in the area should not prevent Olympians from having a training camp there. Tokyo organizers have pledged to help reconstruct areas hit by the 2011 earthquake, tsunami, and meltdown, which left more than 18,000 people dead or missing. Ahead of the Games. There's a benchmark to keep track of, ladies and gentlemen. And we will keep track of it. The Olympics, ladies and gentlemen, it's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Now listen to the warm, won't you please? Greenland's icy reaches are far more vulnerable to warm ocean waters from climate change than had been thought, according to new research by NASA glaciologists and guys from UC Irvine. The work, published in Nature Geoscience, my favorite geoscience publication, shows previously uncharted deep valleys stretching for dozens of miles under the Greenland ice sheet. The bedrock canyons sit well below sea level, meaning that as subtropical Atlantic waters hit the fronts of hundreds of glaciers, those edges will erode much further than had been assumed and release far greater amounts of water, thereby raising sea level more than expected. For about the last decade, a small group of researchers has been studying a particular aspect of the annual snow melt in the Colorado Rockies, how it's affected by dust that blows in from Arizona, southern Utah, and other points in the desert southwest and settles on the mountain snow. In part, the research is driven by the huge importance of the Colorado River, providing water for some 40 million people and more than 5 million acres of cropland. The dust sits on top of the snowpack. It absorbs more solar radiation. You get melting sooner, said one of the researchers. The dust has a surprisingly large influence on both the timing of the annual runoff and the amount of water that ends up in the already stressed Colorado River system. Snowpack monitoring suggests dust is now becoming more of a problem, and it's getting worse at the same time the climate change is ushering in profound changes for the American Southwest that are likely to include more erosion and more dust. Climate change, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, will have profound effects on water and living systems in the Colorado River watershed. Models predict a decrease in precipitation this century of as much as 20% and a temperature rise of as much as 6 degrees. If you depend on models for their predictions, ladies and gentlemen, you're in the wrong business. Reducing deforestation in the tropics would significantly cut the amount of carbon dioxide emitted into the atmosphere by as much as 1/5, according to new research published in Science Daily. In the first study of its kind, scientists have calculated the amount of carbon absorbed by the world's tropical forests and the amounts of greenhouse gas emissions created by loss of trees as a result of human activity. They found that tropical forests absorb almost 2 billion tons of carbon each year, 1/5 of the world's carbon emissions, by storing it in their bark, leaves, and soil. An equivalent amount is lost through logging, clearing of land for grazing, and growing palm oil, soybeans, and sugar. Peat fires and forests add significantly to the greenhouse gas emissions. Researchers estimate if all human-related deforestation of the tropics were to stop, the forests could absorb more carbon than at present, equivalent to 1/5 of global emissions. This was published in Global Change Biology. And May 2014 was the third warmest May in the 35-year satellite-measured global temperature record, the warmest May that wasn't during an El Niño event, according to a professor of atmospheric science and director of the Earth System Science Center at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. The global average temperature for May was about 0.59 degrees warmer than seasonal norms for the month. It was not officially an El Niño month, although there are indications. There's an El Niño forming! Let's have an El Niño party, everybody. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. By the way, on both the NBC and CBS Yak shows today, authoritative officials described ISIS or ISAL as having either been kicked out by Al-Qaeda or disassociated from Al-Qaeda because Al-Qaeda thought ISIS, ISAL was too violent for them. If officials publicly say it's disassociated from Al-Qaeda, and the congressional law authorizing force in Iraq, which was passed by Congress and led to the and was the Bush administration's legal foundation for the Iraq War, specifies It's the authorization of the use of force against Al-Qaeda and associated forces. Not to go all Rand Paul on you. Where's the legal basis for the U.S. to do anything military in Iraq? Just asking. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. The USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet, at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through wwno.org, Sideshow Network, SoundCloud, and iTunes. And it'd be just like having some more tritium if you'd agree to join with me then. But you already, thank you very much. Uh-huh. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Jenny Lawson at WWNO in New Orleans and to Adrian Bottom at Global Radio in London for help with today's broadcast. Email address for this program and a playlist of the music heard here on. They're waiting for you at harryshearer.com along with those Cars I Talk t-shirts. No kidding. Many of the affiliates who broadcast this program stream it on the internet. You can find a list of those streams at publicradiofan.com. Me, I am this close to 100,000 followers at the Harry Shearer on Twitter. Just saying. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station for the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from London.